From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, August 7th, 2020. Democratic state lawmakers today called on Congress to pass a COVID-19 relief package and brought in struggling Maine workers to tell their stories. At a virtual press conference hosted by the co-chairs of the legislature's Budget and Labor Committees, Dan Adams of Garland, a father of three, said he's been laid off from his truck driving job and is frustrated by the lack of urgency in Washington.
I've worked my whole life. I've paid into the system my whole life. And I'm getting, when I need help, I'm getting whatever, dude.
According to the progressive advocacy group, the Maine Center for Economic Policy, more than 180,000 Mainers lost household income after the emergency $600 a week federal unemployment payments expired last week. Meanwhile, the Maine Department of Labor announced today that it is reinstating work search requirements for some individuals receiving unemployment benefits. During an online legislative briefing, Labor Department Commissioner Laura Fortman said individuals who are permanently separated from their employers must engage in work search activities beginning Sunday, August 9th. She says this is being done in response to Maine's relatively low rates of COVID-19 transmission and the reopening of businesses in the state. Fortman says in response to the pandemic, work search requirements have been expanded to include opportunities that enhance an individual's marketability and skill development.
We do know that most people are anxious to increase their skills, and we're hoping that we are providing a range of opportunities for folks to be able to do that.
People still connected to an employer, including people who are self-employed, are not required to actively search for work until 30 days after the state's civil emergency comes to an end. Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Sarah Gideon visited a South Portland solar power company today to unveil a broad set of climate policy goals she says she would pursue if elected over Republican incumbent Susan Collins. Fred Bever has more.
Gideon says the U.S. should be producing net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050, require utilities to increase the amount of carbon-free power they put on the electricity grid, and create a national conservation corps of young people working to respond to climate change. As Speaker of the Maine House, Gideon last year signed on to a bill that would have taxed bulk fossil fuel sales in Maine and used the proceeds to reduce Mainers' electricity bills. At the campaign press conference, she was asked whether she would support a carbon tax at the national level.
In terms of looking at the different ways, including carbon taxes, I know there are conversations about those out there. I'm not prepared to support one of those.
Does that mean you're against it?
It means I'm not prepared to support one of those.
Gideon said much the same about creating so-called cap and trade markets for carbon credits that polluters must buy. She did say she would support raising mileage requirements for automobiles, but did not have a specific number in mind. And Gideon says she's opposed to Central Maine Power's plan to bring hydroelectric power to the region via a transmission line through western Maine. She says she's seen no evidence that the project would actually reduce carbon emissions, as CMP claims. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
A federal appeals court has reaffirmed a lower court ruling that blocked the suspension of a Cape Elizabeth High School student over a note pasted in the school's bathroom. The case involves student Ayla Mansman, who posted a note saying there was a rapist in the school. The school investigated, ultimately finding the school to be safe, but suspended Mansman for 3 days over what it described as bullying. The ACLU argued on Mansman's behalf that the note was considered protected speech. And today, an appeals court judge ruled that a school cannot punish a student, quote, merely because her speech causes argument on a controversial topic. ACLU of Maine legal director Emma Bond says the case supports the rights of students to speak out within school walls.
Students need to be able to speak out about issues that affect their lives, and this case reaffirms that students have the free speech right to do so, and they don't leave that right at the schoolhouse gate.
In an emailed statement, the Cape Elizabeth School Department said that while it's disappointed by the decision, the court still affirmed the ability of school administrators to, quote, restrict student speech that results in the bullying of another student. And an encampment of homeless people that's occupied Portland City Hall Plaza for more than 2 weeks could disperse soon. Leaders say that the protests succeeded in bringing attention to unmet and too often unseen needs of the city's homeless population. But Jess Valero, who's acted as a go-between for the protesters and city officials, says the community that sprung up there was also starting to suffer from a lack of planning and organization. Worry grew that the welfare of the very people the action aimed to empower was being compromised.
And even among like the people that reacted from trauma and unintentionally caused harm, they want to organize. And in order for us to make sure that everybody that wants to be heard is being heard and has a seat at the table, we need to take a step back and move forward intentionally.
But Valero says it won't be easy for some people who have no good alternatives to actually leave and return to Portland's streets and parks. Funds are being raised, Valero says, to help people find hotel rooms, and social workers are helping to find other shelter. Many protesters have already left the plaza, but Valero says there's no particular deadline for completely winding down the project's City Hall presence. A state legislative committee this week advanced the largest expansion of rights for the state's Wabanaki tribes in four decades. But the effort to overhaul Maine's fraught relationship with the tribes still faces many political and logistical hurdles. Steve Missler has our story.
Moments before members of the Judiciary Committee voted for the most substantive and consequential changes to tribal relations since 1980, Democratic State Representative Tom Harnett offered an apology.
We have tried to strip you of your culture, of your language, of the traditions that defined you, because we thought you should be more like us. And we have broken and dishonored treaties and promises made over and over again. How dare we? And for that, I am sorry.
Harnett was addressing leaders of Maine's tribes, who were monitoring changes in the law that they and their predecessors have long sought. Penobscot Nation Chief Kirk Francis thanked Harnett and other committee members for their work, but said the apology for past wrongs wasn't necessary.
None of the individuals on this call bear that cross. I mean, you're not personally responsible for how we got here or the historical tragedies that have taken place with Maine's tribes.
What Francis and other tribal leaders say they want is progress to obtain the same rights granted to Native American tribes in other states, but who are often denied because of the Maine Indian Claims Settlement Act passed by Congress in 1980. At the time, the Settlement Act was heralded as a hard-fought compromise. But over the years, it has become a persistent source of tension because it effectively treats Maine tribes like municipalities, granting them some semblance of local control, but not total self-governance. From the perspective of Democratic Senator Shenna Bellows, the three bills passed by the Judiciary Committee would bring those tribes closer to their ultimate goal, sovereignty.
I think we have an opportunity to rectify a historic wrong and to try to recognize Maine's tribes in the way that tribes in other states are recognized.
The slate of proposals includes a bill allowing tribes to conduct gaming on their lands, eliminating the vexing hurdle of approval from either Maine voters or the legislature. Both have spurned each attempt to change that requirement, including a 2003 referendum that rejected giving tribes the right to have gaming on their lands by a 2-to-1 margin. Lawmakers anticipate the gaming issue could draw more opposition, especially from existing casino operators. And that's why they made the gaming overhaul separate from two other bills that might stand a better chance of passing. One bill exempts the tribes from sales and income tax earned on tribal lands, while also granting tribes jurisdiction over many misdemeanors and felonies. Another proposal clarifies fishing, hunting, and other rights on tribal lands. Each of the bills is controversial and complex, leading Assistant Attorney General Chris Taub to raise concerns about a slew of late changes introduced on Thursday.
I think it's right to be a little bit concerned about making such sweeping kinds of changes and doing them in a way that is very rushed and puts them in a place where they can't easily be corrected.
Taub's warning isn't the first from the Office of Attorney General, an agency that has found itself tangled in litigation with the tribes on several occasions. And the agency has been skeptical of attempts to overhaul the 1980 Settlement Act. Earlier this year, Attorney General Aaron Fry, a Democrat, warned that the current effort to change the act was too drastic, a message also echoed by his predecessor, Governor Janet Mills. As Attorney General, Mills clashed with the tribes several times, but she vowed to repair the relationship upon becoming governor. She created a special commission that became the impetus for many of the changes now in the three bills advanced by the Judiciary Committee. Now, the fate of those bills could be in her hands. A special legislative session is needed to bring the bills up for floor votes, but legislative leaders have been unable to agree on the terms. Mills could call a session by herself, but when lawmakers wondered Thursday if that was going to happen, Democratic State Senator Mike Carpenter seemed doubtful.
The silence from the governor about secession, I think as of today, says no, we're not.
And without a special session, the tribal bills will die without floor votes. Tribal leaders and their attorneys have been negotiating with the governor and her staff, a sign that the proposals could be revived when a new legislature takes over later this year. Penobscot Nation Chief Kirk Francis said he was skeptical of the process from the beginning, but that he and other tribal leaders are committed to seeing it through.
Now, I don't know where this is going. The real work starts now.
Supporters of the overhaul are gearing up for a long campaign. Last month, the tribes formed a nonprofit group designed to push for changes that would allow Maine's four primary Wabanaki tribes to advocate as a single coalition. Some advocates are comparing the effort to the marriage equality movement in Maine, a seven-year battle with several crushing defeats, but one that ultimately emerged triumphant. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Have a good weekend. I'm Nora Flaherty.